The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this February 17th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on ESPN. Oh, my goodness. 106.7. I was not ready for that.
We're back, baby.
The mic wasn't ready for that. The computer wasn't ready for that. The audience was not ready for that.
Got to wake them up here, baby.
That's what keeps them on their toes, man. That's why we tell it like it is and hold nothing back. And you didn't hold back right there.
Every Auburn baseball day. We did it for opening day. Why not do it every single Auburn baseball day?
I'm actually totally down for that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go.
Yeah. Very excited. Yes. Auburn baseball.
Expect it from
tonight.
Here on out.
And you and I get to go to Plainsman Park for the first time this
yes.
year. So very excited for that. Happy Tuesday. Gosh, what a gorgeous day it is here in Auburn and Opelika yet again. And so much to talk about on today's program. You got us for the next 2 hours, whether you like it or not. That's what you got. So buckle up. It's going to be a fun one. We have all three major sports on the docket today. We start with Auburn football. We get into Auburn baseball. We have a great interview with Auburn baseball. And then we get into basketball on the way out today. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Alex Golish had some interesting comments to boosters and money folk and Auburn fans in general. And some comments we haven't really heard from an Auburn coach in quite some time. Haven't really heard from many coaches in general in this new era. So we're going to talk about that to start today's show, plus do a little bit of a deeper dive in Auburn baseball sweeping Youngstown State. Plus, they've got their game, of course, tonight with Cincinnati as they welcome in a P4 opponent. Doesn't feel like it, but it is a P4 opponent in the Cincinnati Bearcats. And we have a great interview at 3:05 that we hinted at yesterday, a young man who got his first start at Auburn on Friday night. And man, did he look good. Jake Marciano, the sophomore lefty, will be joining us at 3:05. We'll have that interview for you. I was able to sit down and talk with him earlier this morning. Got to talk to him about his journey from Virginia Tech to the Plains. Talk about why he chose BT, why he chose Coach Tiford, and what that start was like on Friday night at Plainsman Park. So that's coming up at 3:05. Basketball later in the show as well. But no scheduled guest other than the interview at 3:05. So phone lines are open today if you want to be a part of the show.
Boom. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Yep. Happy. I figured it was a happy Tuesday with the screen.
Sure. Yeah. Like. Not needing to.
I didn't
be
really
asked.
Need confirmation on that.
No.
Yeah.
No. You mentioned having to pull me off the range yesterday before the show. We both got to go last night for at least a little bit. Out the new putters.
We got outside.
We did.
Stepped outside the house, stepped outside the studio. That's good. It's healthy.
It is. Very much so. But no, excited to be able to talk about all three sports. It doesn't happen here too often in February. And how nice is it to be able to have some good news on all three sides of things. We are starting, as you mentioned, with Auburn football. And not the other coach that is in the media for reasons right now, but with Alex Golish.
Yeah.
That we are going to talk about here
Yikes.
Today.
Yeah, and that is enough of that. We
yes.
will leave it
nope.
at that.
Nope, nothing more.
We will leave it
but
at that.
We are talking Alex Golish, and then you mentioned, I'm really excited to hear from Mr. Marciano. Again, lefty absolutely shoved on the mound And do we have, again, I guess jumping the gun a little bit, we do have probable starters with Alvarez tonight,
we have
right?
probable starters. I'm literally looking at Auburn Baseball okay. Twitter to see if we have a lineup yet, because I saw Tennessee tweet theirs out for tonight. Don't have a lineup yet for Auburn, but yes, Alvarez is expected to get the start tonight for Auburn.
A 6 o'clock start, you would imagine we will get a lineup posted during the show.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee posted theirs 5 minutes ago for their game tonight.
Yeah,
so
I would not be
Auburn
surprised.
Auburn will be close by.
Very, very soon. But yeah. No, we are starting the conversation, the show today, talking with Auburn football in quotes from Alex Golish, and I'm sure a bunch of people have seen the comments going around in terms of how he wants to handle boosters moving forward as the head coach for Auburn football.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. But again, phone lines are open before and after our guest today. So if you want to be a part of the show, you have thoughts on anything that we are talking about or anything else that we're not talking about that you want to bring up, we'd love to hear from you. Had great conversations yesterday on Auburn basketball. We can continue that. Talk baseball, football, anything that you would like. Give us a ring, 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open on this Tuesday afternoon. Again, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, as many of our On the Line backers do, at 334-784-1067. And yes, Alex Golish with some fiery comments that may not have made the headlines, which I don't understand why they wouldn't. Maybe some people were making sure they didn't make the headlines. I don't know, but I like it. I like what I heard from Alex Golish, who right now is on his booster tour, I guess. I don't know what they're officially calling
basically.
It. But he's going around the state to all different pockets of Auburn fans and talking to boosters, talking to fans, talking to donors, talking to people who invest in Auburn football and making appearances, right? Shaking hands, kissing babies, that type of thing. But he had a message for a lot of these folks. And it really isn't something we've heard a whole lot of in the NIL era. And maybe it's something good that Auburn needs, and maybe it's what NIL needs too.
Yeah, he starts it off by talking with On Three and saying, quote, when you look at this job, referring to Auburn, he says, quote, everything that you have said is everything that I have heard for years, which that in itself is what it is. The fact that even the outside noise is as loud as it is. He says, quote, it's all of these people outside trying to control the program. Well, you have to, referring to himself, you have to have the confidence in a plan that you're going to essentially control it. That was a huge part of the conversation going in was, is there going to be a bunch of outside influences on this thing? Like, I just won't do it. It's not worth it. We'll start there. Your initial thoughts on that side of things.
It sounds good, right? On paper, that's saying things that I think a lot of Auburn fans believe in, whether it's publicly or behind closed doors. I think a lot of people have been very fed up, no matter what your investment level is, whether you invest or not. I just think Auburn fans in general, the majority of them have grown tired of money controlling the decisions with Auburn football, right?
Which is exhausting considering the way college football is going now.
Right, to where it's only getting worse.
Right.
Which is what Golish is talking about.
Correct.
And implying,
yeah, yeah,
right there. On paper, right, and in a room full of fans and in February, those words are great. Those words are awesome. Right? It's a CEO that says, no, I won't let money control me. I want my product to be this. I'm not going to outsource it to China. We're going to make it in the U.S.
Yeah.
Until China says they can make it for a fourth of the cost, and then you outsource it to China, right? Not talking politics, just talking real-world scenarios. On paper, it sounds good, and it's strong. The question is, can Alex Golish deliver on that? Can he put his foot down and say, thank you for your money, I'm going to spend it the way I feel it needs to be spent, which I hate that we're talking in this language, but it is what it is, right? We're not hiding it anymore. If he can keep up with that, if he can uphold that,
yeah,
and make that the standard and make people let them know, this is my program and I'm going to run it, then I think it's awesome.
He continues on by saying, quote, I would tell you 2.5 months in, what they said was true. Where it's not that way, are the people involved in helping fund this operation? Hell yeah, he says. You need those people. It's also being very real with them. It's having conversations, and it's being really honest. Understandably so, going to the point that you're talking about, Jacob, of, yeah, if I invest X amount of dollars, it would be somewhat relieving to know that, okay, this is where that went. This is where it went to help the program, rather than, yep, okay, here's a couple of commas, go do what you want. Eh, it's fine, I don't need any sort of return on investment, or I don't need any sort of knowledge or receipt on where this is being sent.
It's a good word, receipt. That's a good word.
He says, quote, it's giving them the plan, and now people are involved in the talent acquisition and retention. Do they have a right to know? Yes, they have a right to know what you're spending money on, which is what we're talking about. He then says, but you have to be really careful. If you are going to spend money and then you want to be involved in the decision making, then we're good. We don't need your money. Woo! If you're going to spend money and then you want to be involved in the decision making, then we're good. We don't need your money. But if you're upfront and honest from the beginning, then you've got a chance.
It's big fiery, words, man. Yeah, fiery. I love it. And it's very on par with what Alex Golish said in his opening press conference. And at least the tone and the attitude that he had on day one.
I think that's where I was going to. It's, yeah, it's the demeanor that he handles himself with of, this is what I am stepping into, and I know that I'm stepping into this. Yet that being said, if you want change, you got it at least from the head coaching standpoint. If you want change on the field from what you've seen in the last half decade, your mentality has to change as well.
And I want to make a comparison here, not apples to apples, but at least in terms of demeanor and stepping in and making noise from the get-go. Brian Harsin did a lot of this.
Yes.
But different ways. Okay, stick with me here. Brian Harsin was hired, okay? And I said on this very radio station, on this very show, before you came along with me, Christian, when I was early in my radio career.
Yeah, way back in my day.
Yeah, way back when, you know, you had to walk to the studio uphill both ways, you know.
That was back when I used to have a sleeping bag outside that you just let me in half the time.
I think that was before that, to be honest with you.
It probably was.
I was still in college. I was still taking over.
Oh, so I wasn't even the state of Alabama yet.
Yeah. Wait, I don't know. Anyway, whatever. I've said it before that when Harsin was hired and he started speaking similarly to this, I loved it.
Yes.
I loved it because that's what Auburn needed. Funny enough, 5 years later, we still need it. But Auburn needed it at the time when he was hired. When Gus Malzahn was let go and Brian Harsin was hired, he stepped in and said, this is my program. I'm doing it my way. Watch us. We'll be good. Watch us. Right? He looked me in the eyes and said that at SEC Media Day. Said, watch us.
I believe he told, at the time, 87,000 people on a Jumbotron to just watch.
But he did it in a way that came off arrogant. He did it in a way that came off as, I don't think you know what you're up against.
Right.
And clearly he had no idea what he was doing. And he will go down as one of the, if not the worst head football coach in the history of Auburn. Because he did not know. He had no idea. Brian Harsin did not have any idea what he was walking into. So the comments were like, oh, sweet, this is awesome. And then he fell flat on his face and embarrassed himself and embarrassed the brand. Alex Golish is coming off a little differently here because he's admitting, or at least accepting, that he knows what's going on. He accepts that he knows what he's walking into and he's facing it head on. There's a little bit more confidence and a positive spin on it, maybe.
Yeah.
Rather than the arrogant, can't use that word, arrogant jerkness that Brian Harsin used it with.
Sure, yeah. Right? It feels like if you are one of these donors or you're just anybody that he is speaking to, it doesn't feel as if you walk away from the conversation with a foul taste in your mouth.
You shouldn't.
It feels okay, although my reins might be pulled back a little bit. It doesn't feel as if, yeah, that you walked away talking with a guy who just acts like he knows so much more than you do and is just taking you for whatever your bank account is willing to give.
Because I think he did a good job. Again, we're talking comments from Alex Golish that he's making on his little booster tour that he's on right now, talking with Auburn fans around the state and showing face and acknowledging their existence, acknowledging their investment,
yeah,
right, and their fandom of this program and this university. But good for him for stepping up and saying, thank you, I promise we will do what we feel necessary with your dollars. And to his point, and the word you used was receipt, and I think that's great. Yeah, if I invest, for simple math here, if I invest $5 million in the Auburn football program, it's like investing into a company, right? If you invest in a company and you hold 10% of the stake of that company, you want to know what's going on. You want to have a seat at the table. You want to know what's happening on a day-to-day basis and what the money's going to, and if profits are up, you want your share, and if profits are down, you want to know why. This is no different on the base level if you invest in a college football program.
Yeah.
But college football is not run like a business,
no,
organization. You don't deserve, I guess you don't hold the right to have all the information.
Alex Golish will happily let you walk through the front door and he will guide you into the office room to go and have a meeting, but you're not going to walk in because of whatever your check looks like, that you're not going to walk in into the distribution center and see how everything is run and walk up to Coach Golish and say, no, this is what I want.
Exactly. And I think Auburn is not the only one. Let me say that as well. Auburn is not the only football program in America that's dealing with this right now.
Oh, no.
They all deal with it.
And even more so now with other programs that haven't dealt with it in the future than before, because of all of this third-party NIL that goes on, so many people now want so much more of a say to control their little product that they can.
You think Texas Tech isn't dealing with this
right
now? That's
what I said. I was thinking Texas Tech. I was thinking Utah. Again,
yeah,
just from the third-party perspective.
I mean, you're talking tens of millions of dollars that are being paid and invested in these organizations, and everybody wants a say. And I understand it, but we have to be able to separate a college football program and a normal business in the corporate world.
You can't
they run differently.
You can't have a head coach as a figurehead controlled by say 400 people that are the ones delivering the outside dollars.
Right, and that's what Golish is saying here. Basically saying, you can invest, we want you to invest, heck, we need you to invest, but your say-so and your foot in this organization, your foothold in this organization is going to take a step back. And if that's a problem to you, then keep your money.
Yeah. Thank you so much, but no thanks.
And that's awesome. Good for him. Will it work? Who knows? Couldn't tell you. It may completely backfire, and we may be sitting here in 3 years the same way we did with Hartson and say, what an idiot. We might. I don't know.
You know what helps? The result on the field.
Yeah. That will help.
Best way to get everybody off your back?
Win.
Win football games.
Doesn't cure all, but it cures a lot.
Win in the fourth quarter. I mean,
yeah.
Simple game. Simple game, really. Simple subject. Simple topic. All of this, right?
You would
anything
think.
With money is just very simple.
Yeah. We want to hear what you have to say, though. How do you feel about Golish and his comments and saying, thank you, but no thank you if you're not happy with how I'm running this thing or how I'm going to run this thing? I mean, he's only been here for 2 months. So
yeah.
Give us a call. We want to hear from you on this. 334-321-1390. We'll take a break, come back, and dive into this a little bit more, plus what this could mean for the future of Auburn, right, with recruiting and the transfer portal, and then, like we said, just winning games on the field. We'll have that plus Auburn baseball conversation as well as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 as we continue talking the comments from Alex Golish. Again, he's making his rounds around the state to various cities and things, talking to Auburn fans and boosters and donors and people that he acknowledged are important to the success of Auburn football and the future of Auburn football with their fandom, yes, but of course the dollars that they invest as well. And again, we're here in this time where we're just openly talking about it now, to where not only are you investing in upgrades to the practice field or the weight room, but you're investing in buying players. Like, that's just where we are. And he acknowledged that they are important. But it's his comments of, thank you for your investment. We will spend it how we see fit. You are not going to get a text, phone call, or an email on every single thing we spend every single dollar on, and you need to trust me because this is my program. And if that upsets you, then keep your money.
Yeah, he says this was a huge part of the conversation going in, talking about when he was getting hired, was, is there going to be a bunch of outside influences on this thing? And he said, no, I won't do it. It's not worth it. He follows up by saying they have a right to know what they're spending money on, but you have to be really careful. If you are going to spend money and then you want to be involved in the decision-making, then we're good. We don't need your money. But if you're upfront and honest from the beginning, then you have a chance.
Which tells me, and we have a text we're going to get to in just a moment, that tells me, because he acknowledged the idea that he knew and had heard these things about Auburn, which that's its own separate conversation. The fact that a guy from South Florida knew the issues that Auburn was having, but I think that's a lot of the coaching circles too.
Sure.
But sounds like to me, Christian, he addressed that with John Cohen before he accepted the job. And basically said, it's what it sounds like to me. I'm not saying this is what happened.
Right,
I'm just saying, sounds like he told John Cohen, you better back me up on this. This is what I plan on doing. This is how I plan on acting and speaking. I need you to back me up on it. And as far as I can tell, John Cohen is. I don't think he has verbally come out and said anything about it, but he hasn't verbally come out and said something bad about it.
I wonder, and this is, again, all speculation, but just from the standpoint of this conversation of, you mentioned Cohen backing everything that Golish is saying, I wonder if Cohen didn't have a choice since Sumrall did not take the Auburn job. To where if there was a little bit of, just because of how fast everything happened.
Once, like desperation?
I wasn't going to go that far, but almost of, because again, once Sumrall took the Florida job, we were expecting it to either be Durkin that got the step up, and all of a sudden, that very next morning, you heard Golish on the flight to Auburn. And so, I'm not saying that that was desperation, but you wonder if that plays a factor of, okay, as long as we can get you, you can at least have your say for now.
Yeah, I mean, could be. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think it absolutely could
be. Not that that's the deciding factor, but something to at least play a relatively decent factor. That was unfortunate. I saw the charger pool.
I got it. Don't worry. I got it. I had to fight through three other cords, but I got there.
It's like when you're back in the day when everybody had corded headphones, you know, way back when the back of the TV was still part of the TV.
When it was a box.
Yeah. You put your headphones in your pocket. They come out and they're
all tangled up.
Yeah. But no, again, I don't think desperation is the correct word, just because there's obviously plenty of conversations that were going on even during the Sumrall search when you felt like that was the easy route for him to make his way to the Plains. But you wonder if that does play a little bit of a factor in making sure that he was going to be the next head coach.
Our text box is always open, 334-784-1067 for On the Line. And our boy Eric in Auburn, which, by the way, Eric, I hope you've listened to our girl Ella Langley's new song that she dropped on Friday. It's a banger. It's awesome. A little
Eric,
different. But
Eric,
it's
also total sub conversation. You're the president. You can say, do we change the? Is it on the linebackers throughout the year, or does it change by sport?
That'd be tough.
Like the line drives, like
the on the line drives. Yeah.
Does it change by sport?
I don't know. I'll let him decide that. But he asks us in this scenario, can you read anything between the lines with Golish's comments? Do you think Freeze was feeling pressure from the donors on personnel and decision-making, or simply is this Golish just setting some boundaries?
I think there's definitely some factors that play into it, and maybe not even from the standpoint of the individual decision-makers, but I think there was pressure with the roster because of how many stars, especially out wide, that he felt pressure to get them the football, which goes to the conversation of how it felt like the offense was doing the opposite of what they needed to do. I think there was a pressure to make sure that Cam got targets or...
But do you think there was a pressure on how he built the roster? I don't feel like
Maybe not to build it, but I think of all of the money, say there's five people that helped keep Cam Coleman at Auburn last year, they need their sort of agreement on that side of things off the field to where you can't just go and call plays how you want because of that side note of your in the back of your mind of, okay, I also have to make sure that this stays on. I need to make sure that they stay friends. I need to make sure that they stay on our side.
Given that Golish is bringing it up, yes, Eric, that is my answer. Yes, you can read between the lines. And he doesn't know the full story, right, because he wasn't here.
That's what I was going to say. Maybe not even directly with Freeze.
But he knows more than we do, and he knows how it was running and whether that was through coaches or through the interview process or through John Cohen or whatever. Like, he clearly knew how it was going. And being a halfway decent coach, he can see from the outside, hey, that didn't work.
Yeah.
So we're not going to do that. And he probably hasn't done that his whole career. So I think there's a combination of a lot of things. But I don't think we talk about enough, too, in this whole idea. Not just the boosters giving the money. How about the players taking the money?
Yeah.
Having demands and having – I mean, we heard on or off the record at Auburn and other places – of players walking into coaches' offices mid-season before games threatening not to play if they don't get more money. That's a real thing. Yep. That happened at several places last year that I know of, 100% confirmed.
That or off-season grants of you will not take me off the field on third down. I will be in the backfield.
Forgot about that one.
I will be a receiver. I will be on the field as one of your linebackers on third
down.
You
will not bring in another linebacker or another corner or another O-tackle. Like, those things happen on a daily basis. And you would think that Alex Golish having fiery comments for the boosters, he would have those same feelings to his players as well.
I'm going to find a quote that there was talking about one player's NIL demand. So we'll play that. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Yeah, we'll talk about that and then flip over to baseball right after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. And we're going to put a bow on this NIL conversation, I think, right? Talking about Alex Golish, his comments on boosters and donors for Auburn football, and talking about the idea of basically, you can donate money, but you're not going to tell me how to run my program. And you were looking for something in particular because we were getting into the more NIL side of it, the players having demands, not just people donating the money, but the players taking the money. And you had remembered something just insane for a player in the Big Ten.
Yeah, this was something from February 4th, I believe, or this is when I screenshotted it. It was from 6 hours before. So, but it was Pete Nakos going inside the NIL negotiations with the 2026 recruiting class, and he highlighted the highest paid recruits, the biggest spenders, and the dumbest uses of money that he could remember talking about some of the recruits. But this is a quote that was in there in this article from On3. And it's a quote from a Big Ten general manager. And so obviously a program that you would imagine being relatively successful based off of these player demands. But this quote says, "We had a kid ask for a signing bonus, a flight stipend, a jersey number choice guaranteed, insurance policies, a loss of home and disability, a vehicle stipend, a stipend for a rental house, an award campaign push, preferred walk-on spots, tickets to home and away games, and field passes for agents every single weekend."
Good Lord.
We only hear about the dollar signs of things, but it obviously goes well beyond that. I mean, we've heard conversations of players that commit to Tennessee and Texas and everything, getting land grants, like, which is smart on their side of things.
That's so smart.
But, like, weekly flights back home and their parents getting picked up on charter jets and things like that. I mean, this is from one player that demanded this beyond, I want my $1.5 million or whatever the case is.
Do you think Minnesota gave it to him?
Oh, yeah, it was actually Perry. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Who gave it to him?
Minnesota!
Thank you. That's a lot of commas.
That's a lot of demands.
Not only from a dollars perspective, but a lot of commas from the standpoint of this is what I want almost weekly. Yeah. I want a vehicle stipend, a stipend for a rental house for friends and family. I mean,
and not saying he got all that, but that's what they were asking.
That's what they were asking, and then I'm sure the school countered with whatever the case.
Oh, God. That's so exhausting. That's so exhausting. So, I don't know, man. With Golish, before we move on to baseball, I just hope that the energy and the fire that he is giving Auburn fans and boosters and donors, and he's not doing it from a place of evil, okay? No. He's not coming out here and saying, this is my job. Leave me alone. You can't tell me what to do. Like another coach that we compared him to earlier.
Yeah, just watch.
He's doing it because he feels it's what's best. He's doing it because he feels it's the reset and the refresh that Auburn needs. I just hope he carries that into the locker room with his players, too.
Sure, yeah.
And recruits and whatever.
He's also done it before.
Yeah.
And that's what he said. That's what he started this whole entire quote that we started the show about was, you have to have the confidence of the vision that you have and basically have to have a little bit of trust in the understanding of, I know how to do what I need to do.
Yeah.
I'm a professional for a reason.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But interesting stuff there. Wanted to start the show with that today. If you have thoughts on that, though, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. The text box is open as well at 334-784-1067. Eric says that he is definitely open to changing the name of on the linebackers per season. I'm going to leave that up to him. I am no way close enough of creative to do that, so don't make me do it because I can't. And he also says to get your sleep tonight because he will be at the Acadome tomorrow morning with his cup of coffee, so you better be ready.
Bring your own coffee, baby. Lee Scott Academy taking on St. James and Montgomery Academy, 9 a.m. and 10:30. We'll tell you a little bit more about that
Saint
after the
Jimmy's.
Show.
St. Jimmy's.
But
St. James, one of my favorite board spaces on Monopoly. The Pinks are underrated in Monopoly, my friend. St. James plays.
I've never played you in Monopoly, and I'm very happy that I haven't.
It's my favorite board game in the world.
That's scary.
I love Monopoly. But the problem is,
how long until you can make a NIL college football game like a Monopoly?
You probably can now.
Make all the spaces. You're a head coach, and you got to go around a board getting all of the players that you need every single year?
I don't know. That sounds kind of not morally right. That sounds kind of wrong. You're going around and I don't know, you're buying players
but you can do it, and there's different spots of a 5-star receiver, there's a 3-star receiver, that's
there's a walk-on kicker.
The 5-star plus receiver is the beach house condo.
Send
the 3-star receiver is just, you know, the
who's making Monopoly nowadays? Is it still Hasbro? Send that in. Maybe you just, that you would may be, have just come up with an idea.
That would be incredible, because don't you have like 3 or 4 Auburn Monopolies? Mm-hmm.
I probably have 50 plus Monopoly sets across my several houses of family members and stuff. Just different themed ones. Yeah.
I don't know if I've played
it is Hasbro.
Board
I was
games
right.
in my life.
Dude, I love Monopoly. The problem is finding somebody to play with, because everybody's like, oh, it takes so long. That's the fun of the game. If you want to play a short game, play on your phone or something. I don't know. God forbid we sit down and play a, huh? Yeah, that's funny. You and I get it. Nobody else does. I don't know, man. Somebody just said they would kill me in Monopoly. Wow. Okay. I will take you up on that. Somebody's willing to play me in Monopoly. So whoever you are in our text box at 784-1067, please. And
bring
I'm not
it.
Playing on my phone. I want old school, board on the kitchen table. I'm the ship. I'm the battleship. I'm always the battleship.
Bring it to the War Eagle Wall tonight.
Oh, my gosh.
6 p.m.
Yeah, let's play at Plainsman Park tonight. That would be fun.
Everybody move away your $5 domestic brews and hot dogs. We're setting up a dang Monopoly board.
And if we can't finish it, leave it there. We'll come back next Tuesday and we'll finish, because we probably won't. Anyways, send that in to Hasbro. Maybe you just came up with a $1 million idea. But, hey, speaking of Plainsman Park, perfect transition.
What a tie-in right there, baby.
Auburn's 3-0. Tigers 3-0, undefeated, swept Youngstown State this weekend. They've got Cincinnati coming in tonight. We'll talk more about the Bearcats coming up in just a little bit, but wanted to do a deeper dive into what Auburn did this past weekend, how Auburn did it this past weekend, and why Auburn baseball did it this past weekend. And first two games are a little sketchy, right? Bats were slow to get started. Pitching was incredible. And a doubleheader on Saturday. We know how much baseball players and coaches and broadcasters don't like doubleheaders, but that's what you had. But regardless, Auburn gets it done 3-0.
Yeah, looking at Friday night with Jake Marciano, who, again, you will hear from in just a few moments to start hour number two. Got the start. The sophomore lefty went 5 innings. 2 hits, only 1 earned, gave up a solo jack, but 12 strikeouts in his 17 batters faced, 12 Ks in the 15 outs that he recorded through 65 pitches. That's absurd.
That's pretty good stuff.
You then go into the bullpen with Drew Whalen, who gets credited for the win because at the time it was a 1-0 Youngstown State lead into the home half of the fifth inning.
Drew in back-to-back games.
Yeah, Drew Whalen goes 3 innings, 3 strikeouts, and 12 batters he faces. Again, 43 total pitches, and then you go to Garrett Brewer, who gets the save, 2 strikeouts and 1 inning of work. So you struck out 17 in 9 innings in game one for a 2-1 win, which, again, really kind of set the stage of what we were hoping for on the mound. And then you mentioned it's game two, the same score. Wasn't necessarily pretty. It was more relieving than anything. But Auburn walks it off in the home half of the 10th inning. But my goodness, you had 14 strikeouts in game two. It was Jackson Sanders who went 6 innings, 73 pitches, had 8 strikeouts. Jet Johnston went in there as well, 3 innings of work, 3 strikeouts. And Hetzler gets credited with that walk-off win in the home half of the 10th inning. He goes 1 inning, throws 10 pitches, almost through an immaculate inning. 10 pitches, had 3 strikeouts. I didn't even realize that until looking at it just now. But
well, hey, little tease here. Again, we're talking to Jake Marciano coming up at 3:05. I talked to him this morning. He actually talked about that a little
bit. Did he really?
He did. And why he did not throw an immaculate inning.
Oh.
A little baseball for you. A little baseball strats. Yep. Very cool stuff from him.
Okay.
Because Hetzler's good enough to do it.
Sure.
But it's not just about throwing strikes every time.
We're talking about like a setup?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, understandable.
But still cool.
Very much so.
He, again, not to give it all away, but he goes into the idea of, yeah, Hetzler could have thrown an immaculate inning. He's good enough to do it, but he felt it was more necessary to do this. So, yeah. That's coming up, 3:05.
Okay.
Jake Marciano.
I'm going to guess throws a sweeper and then lock them up with a fastball inside at the knees. That'll be my guess. And then in game three, the offense, I would say that it was safe to say, came to life. Where did the Americans just place?
I think they just took first. Yes.
Two-man bobsled, Chris Gordy. Suck on that.
Yeah. Hey, you American hater, Chris Gordy. Talk to him on Thursday. He's going to be so glad when the Olympics are over. Dude, bobsled's so cool. It's so cool. I don't care what anybody says. Bobsled is on. Dang, look at that high turn. And they still... They took first. I don't think they've won it yet, but they took first. Anyway.
These dudes are going 82 miles an hour
in a,
what looks like a plastic, what looks like, and again, this is totally not accurate and totally not giving them the props that it deserves, but it looks like one of those things that you spend all weekend on with your dad, and it like races down the hill.
Yeah. It's like the little, the wooden, not rally cars.
That's what I'm trying to think of.
You're making Boy Scouts, you
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like, but you're going 80 miles an hour downhill on skates.
Oh, the Germans are going. Oh, no.
Pretty sweet.
Oh,
but the bats come to life for Auburn in game three. They win it 17-2. That being said, there wasn't really a pitching drop-off whatsoever. You only played 7 innings, but you had 12 strikeouts in that contest as well. A record strikeout weekend for the Auburn Tigers on the mound, the most you've had under Butch Thompson and the most that they've had in a 3-game series since 1992.
And the starters are the ones that stole the show. I mean, this number right here that George Nunnally provided us with is just unbelievable. Starting pitchers this weekend for Auburn combined to strike out 29 batters and one walk.
How many innings?
16 total innings. 29 strikeouts, one walk across Auburn's three starters this weekend. Now, I think there is something to be said about the bats for Youngstown State. The hitting numbers, I don't think, are going to be all that good this year for the Penguins. That pitching staff was legit, though.
How many strikeouts? You said 29?
For the three starters, 29 strikeouts, one walk, and 16 innings pitched.
They struck out 60% of the lineup.
That's impressive. From just your three-man rotation at the starting spot.
Yeah, not including Hetzler striking out all three that he – I mean, yeah. It
29 of the 43 strikeouts were to the starters.
But, no, I do agree with you that Youngstown State's success will come on the mound. And
they'll have a lot of low-scoring games.
We talked about that on Friday when we were previewing the series because, what, it was redshirt, senior, and senior, right, for the Penguins?
Yeah.
So
compared to sophomore for Auburn.
I mean, you're throwing guys that are – experience that have been in that moment that the lights will not be too bright. And again, people that watch enough baseball know that there is fantastic pitching everywhere, especially when you go to look at some of these smaller mid-major programs. Every single program has 1.5 aces, basically. And they always have a couple of really good guys in the pen that you got to work towards in a three-game series, and Auburn did just that.
Yeah, so they did. They're 3-0, and they prepare for Cincinnati tonight. We'll talk about the Bearcats here coming up in just a moment. Plus, we're going to talk to Clay from Montgomery when we come back. We wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
So an update as we wrap up hour number one. I was unaware of Germany's bobsled game. The women dominated yesterday. The men have dominated the two-man bobsled. The U.S., the Americans were in first for about a minute. And the Germans have just swept the two-man bobsled for the guys.
There were three straight and one. The first one went half a second faster than the Americans. The second one then went a half second faster than the first group of Germans. And then this group just went that finished a second and a half in front of second place.
So like 2.5, 3 seconds faster than the Americans. In something that they're doing in less than 60 seconds. They're going down in like 53-second intervals. So pretty crazy stuff. So GGs, Americans. Thanks for playing. Let's get to the phone lines as we wrap up hour number one. 334-321-1390. Clay, thanks for holding on through the break, my man. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is what is on everybody's mind.
Okay.
What is on the top of every sports fan's mind right now? What about the Canadian curling team and the cheating scandal?
Yeah, we talked about them yesterday. It happened again. It happened again.
Did it really?
The girls, yeah.
Oh, I missed this. No way. So they are actually cheating. They really did do it.
Oh, they're not cheating. They're double cheating. They're double cheating.
Wow. Which means, Clay, they're teaching it. That ain't coincidence by any means.
Dude, a Canadian dropped an F-bomb. That's the first Canadian ever to speak that word out of their mouth.
That's so funny.
And it was caught on camera.
Yeah, and played back on national television.
And did it when they were wrong.
That's phenomenal.
Here's the thing, Jacob and Christian. Here's the thing. They dropped an F-bomb against a neutral country. They're not even aligned with anybody.
That's so awesome. See,
but no, that's not what I called about.
Go ahead. You're good.
All right. So, no, baseball.
Yeah.
So glad baseball started. I saw a twinkle in coach's eye this weekend. You know how big he really is into pitching. You know, pitching is Butch's thing.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a process scorer and a pitcher. He's not a, you know, get out there and see how many bombs you can hit. And it reminded me back when I coached volleyball, I coached a very, very, very good girls volleyball team. And I remember one specific night that we went out and we played this team, and they didn't do it on purpose. Now, the team that the Youngstown State, they did it on purpose to Auburn, throwing all those off speed pitches that they were just dropping. I'm talking, they were, every pitch was perfect.
Especially night one.
But, oh my God. I mean, they were throwing hooks. They wasn't 12 to 6. They were outside of the clock and dropping to 6. But we played a team one night, and our girls were used to playing like really national level talent. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're talking about jump serves and just, you know, 80 mile an hour serves. And we played this team, and they were just bad. And they were serving underhanded. Not to fool us, because that's all they could do. And our girls could not even receive and set and pass, because they just weren't used to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there, and I'm listening all this weekend. And, you know, Brad's like, you know, there's a straight ball, 83 miles an hour. I guess that's a fastball.
Right.
You know, and so, but if you remember last year, we came out, and I don't remember the team we played. We blew them out the first game, and then we lost the second game, kind of the same circumstance, and then won the third game. But it's finding a way to win is a really good thing. And our pitching, holy mackerel. And it may not hold up that well the rest of the year, but good gracious.
Yeah, all very good points, Clay. Really,
the
really good points.
They look dynamite. So, anyhow, keep your eye on them Canadians. Them Canucks are crooked. They've been tricking us all these years.
Yeah, they've been fooling us with their kindness.
Team cheaters.
That's right. Clay, we appreciate it, brother.
That's how they sneak in.
Appreciate the call, Clay. Didn't know we had Canadian hate on the show today, but there you go.
Curling does the calmest sport in the world.
Dude,
fires
I missed that
up.
The women did it too.
Yeah, well,
God,
I don't
I
know if
that.
This is like the first time, but I remember seeing
That's
comments
so awesome.
About it. It was one of the very few times that they've had to put a side camera at like the line where you're not allowed to touch afterwards.
Well, I heard that whoever they were competing against, whatever country it was, the camera angle that we saw with the dude dropping the F-bomb, I was told this. I don't know if this is true or not. I was told that camera angle, it's not like an NBC camera. That was the opposing team setting that up to help them see, to basically prove that the Canadians were cheating.
Right, and so because of that, they started adding the camera that is right on.
That's remarkable.
Basically the foul line, if you will. I'm not exactly sure what it's called, but to see if there is contact made after the line.
It's an awesome. That's, dude, that's what I'm saying, man. If you don't like the Olympics, you know, same thing as Ricky Bobby said, if you don't chew Big Red, I'll let you feel the rest. Holy Cross is the team that Clay was talking about from last year. Auburn beat them 4-1, lost to Holy Cross 4-2 in game two, and then came out and beat them 14-6 in the opener. So,
same thing with UPenn back in the regional.
Yeah.
Again, there's great baseball. There's great pitching everywhere.
But good points.
Struck my you-know-what out plenty of times.
Yeah, but good points by Clay, though. Auburn may not have been ready for off-speed filth, and they saw it, but they woke up, and they started 3-0. They play Cincinnati tonight. But Clay talked about the pitchers. We talk with a pitcher, Jake Marciano, the sophomore lefty. He joins us to start hour number two. Stick around.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this very nice and somewhat warm Tuesday afternoon. Perfect weather for tonight's Auburn baseball game against Cincinnati. We'll talk some more about that here in this hour. Plus, we'll talk some college basketball in this hour as well. New bracketologies are out. More games are on the schedule as Auburn prepares for Mississippi State this week. We'll talk about that in this hour, but if you missed any of the first hour, we had a lot of fun. We talked about some fiery comments from head coach Alex Golish for Auburn football, kind of calling out some Auburn fans and Auburn donors as well, but not in the way that you think. So we talked about that, plus what it means and what it could mean moving forward. Also, had some good Auburn baseball conversation, kind of recapping the opening weekend series win over Youngstown State, the series sweep over Youngstown State, as the Tigers do prepare for Cincinnati this evening. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out on the podcast version of the show at our station website at ESPNAU.com. And as I said, we will have some basketball conversation, a couple big games last night, a couple big games tonight, and big games in the SEC as we come down the home stretch. Again, Auburn trying to get back on track with Mississippi State tomorrow. We'll talk about that in the back half of this hour. But we teased it, we told you it was coming, and now we got it. We have Jake Marciano, the sophomore left-handed pitcher for Auburn baseball. Got the start on Friday night against Youngstown State, and you couldn't have asked for much more. Gave you five complete innings, just one run, and 12 total strikeouts. The Virginia Tech transfer was all of advertised and then some. I had a chance to sit down and catch up with him this morning to talk about the transfer from Tech to Auburn, what he thought, what he felt, what he said when they gave him the baseball Friday night, and what it was like to play at Plainsman Park. So this is Auburn baseball sophomore lefty Jake Marciano. Back here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. We continue talking Auburn baseball as the season opener has come and gone. Tigers are 3-0, but now they prepare for the Cincinnati Bearcats. And we've talked a little bit about it already. We'll go in more detail as we go. But, man, we're excited to continue our weekly conversations with members of Auburn baseball. We had head coach Butch Thompson on last week. We now have our first player of the season and couldn't think of a better one to start than the sophomore lefty Jake Marciano. My man, it is good to talk to you, and we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Well, there's a lot to talk about with you and your path so far as just a young sophomore here on the Plains. And so I first want to ask you, how did it feel on Friday pitching at Plainsman Park, getting the start for this team, and coming away with the win for your team on Friday night?
It was electric. It was a great honor to obviously start on that Friday game, just to give us the original beginning start, and being able to go out there and attack the zone and give our chance the team to win was really a special honor.
What was the Plainsman Park atmosphere like? I know you weren't here when they did all the renovations, but now you see what Plainsman Park looks like, and it's just so glorious and marvelous in what they've done. What did it feel like for you with the fans and that atmosphere and your first time there at Plainsman?
It's unreal. Having that atmosphere is really something else. Just being able to have those fans behind your back and having that Auburn family is kind of unlike anything I've ever experienced before, and it was really a surreal experience.
Well, I want to talk about you and your journey again getting here. We got Jake Marciano of Auburn Baseball here with us on ESPN 106.7. Just a sophomore for you. Spent your freshman season back at Virginia Tech and had some incredible numbers, and you were very well in that rotation. Believe you started every weekend in ACC play. What was it, I guess, your freshman year like at Tech, or just in general in terms of college baseball, your freshman season at the big level?
Yeah, exactly. Going into that school, I was really just trying to get an opportunity. I kind of like developed a little bit later on the baseball side. So I really was trying to get an opportunity at that school, and I kind of did. And once I got that opportunity, I took my advantages and I went with it. I was able to finally start as a freshman. And with that, I kind of just rode with it. And being able to start against those ACC teams was a real honor, like I said before. So being able to do that, I was able to finally get to a dream school like I am now.
Well, what went into your decision to transfer, and not necessarily to talk about Virginia Tech, but for you personally, right, to enter your name into the portal, because we know how risky that can be and how big of a decision that is. What went into that for you, and then ultimately, what made you choose Butch Thompson and the Auburn Tigers?
Exactly. So just like I said before, I kind of developed late, so I really couldn't go to an SEC school out of high school. So my goal was to go to an SEC school. It's the best conference there is out there. It's where all the best players are. Mm-hmm. So to get to where I want to be as a baseball player and where I want to be in at life, I really needed to get to this conference. And when I went into the portal, I wanted to really see my options. And the first place I really went to was Auburn. And when I really came to the school, I went to the Super Regional. And nice. Seeing that atmosphere, like you said, like it's unlike anything else, having this whole town behind our back and being able to connect with the coaches was really something special. And realizing that our pitching coach, Coach Tiford and Butch, they're both obviously left-handed pitchers, it kind of just felt like the spot to be. And with Carl behind everything, it just really did feel like the one spot that I needed to be. So that's really what drove my decision, were the connections.
I mean, it doesn't get any better than a recruiting trip to Plainsman Park for a super regional, first time ever. The result obviously didn't go the way we wanted it, but man, you got to see Auburn baseball in the program and the fan base at its all-time high, so no wonder you decided to come here.
Exactly. That's true.
And so now that you're here, again, Jake Marciano, Auburn baseball pitcher, the lefty, the sophomore who started on Friday, the game or the season opener, my man. I mean, what was your reaction when Butch and Tiford, they came to you and said, "Hey, Jake, you're getting the ball, man. We want to start the season with you on the mound." What was your reaction to hearing that news and in terms of just how big that was for you?
It was amazing. Like BT always talked about, was just pounding the strike zone. Whoever throws the most strikes is the person that we will trust the most. So it's whoever our fielders and our coaches feel is the most comfortable on the mound, who can make those decisions, and who's able to mainly just pound the strike zone. That's all we talked about, was strike percentage, and that was my goal. I didn't really care. I trusted my stuff in the spring and the fall just to get the outs. Like, I put the ball in the zone, and I wasn't afraid really to get hit. You kind of have to let the hitter try to hit you to get them out. You got to get them in swing mode. So my goal was just to throw strikes. And when they finally told me that I would be starting, it was a great honor.
Well, 65-70%, I believe, is the number we've heard and been told several times by Coach Thompson about. That's what he expects from you guys in the pitching rotation, right? I mean, 65-70% strikes. And for non-baseball people or even casual fans, the idea that, oh, just those strikes, it's just that easy. But, man, you could speak to it. It's not that easy, especially when you're going up against some of the best hitters in the country.
Exactly. Throwing strikes isn't just like throwing the ball down the middle. You have to know the certain situations, and sometimes you kind of have to waste a pitch. Like, you have to throw a ball out of the zone. Like Hetzler the other night, he had immaculate inning going, but he was like, "Well, I have to get the ball down in the zone to get a swing and miss." So he did. He didn't like really try to think about that immaculate inning. He just tried to get the hitter out, and that's like really what we try to do as a pitching staff: just suffocate the strike zone and then expand from there and try to get the ball where we need to.
Jacob Goins with you here on ESPN 106.7. We're talking with Jake Marciano, sophomore left-handed pitcher for the Auburn Tigers, as they get prepared for Cincinnati tonight at Plainsman Park, coming off a three-game sweep over Youngstown State. And man, let's dive into your start on Friday a little bit, to where you went five full innings, 12 strikeouts for you, no walks as well. Was that the expectation walking out there, or when you walked off the mound and they said your night was done, you were like, "All right, that was pretty awesome"? Because, I mean, that's a heck of a performance, my man.
Yeah, no, the goal originally was just to go five innings, get kind of my feet in the water for the season, really just, like I said, just throw throw strikes. And I felt like that was really what I tried to do. I didn't really think about who I was facing or the level of competition. All I did was go out there and just try to get them out. Like, I really wasn't trying to strike them out. I was just trying to get them out, like, use my defense. Like, I trust them. So, but when I was able to go up there and just really, all my pitches were really just working that day and being able to find out how well they were and just suffocate the strike zone, I was able to expand, like I said. And with those Ks happening, I really wasn't thinking about how many there were or how, like, it was affecting me on the mound. I really just went back out there, and until they said I was done, that's when I was done.
Well, the only earned run you gave up was the solo shot. But other than that, again, five full innings, 12 Ks for you, Jake. And again, what an incredible start for you in your Auburn career. But, man, what an incredible start for the pitching staff as a whole, right? Setting a record with 43 strikeouts and just six walks on the weekend. That's the most strikeouts in a three-game series at Auburn since 1992. Did BT bring that up? Did Tiefert bring that up? And what the starters did this weekend with you and your guys?
They definitely brought it up, but it wasn't like a expectation that we needed to meet. It was something that was a result of our goal, which was obviously the 60% strike. So if we just throw strikes, that's the result that's going to come out of it. It wasn't like we were trying to get a certain number of Ks. It just kind of just happened because the expectation on just throwing strikes.
Talking with Jake Marciano of Auburn Baseball. Again, got the start this past Friday. We expect to see him again coming up in Arlington with some big games this weekend. But talk to me a little bit about the other guys in this rotation. Guys like Jackson Sanders and Drew Whalen. We saw Alex Petrovic. We're going to see Alvarez tonight. I mean, what has the pitching room been like for you since you got here? And how have you guys kind of grown together in the offseason and now that the season's finally here?
It's been great. It's obviously changed a lot. Like, something that was expected in the fall is never what it will seem in the spring, and it can change throughout the season. Like, it's never 100% set in stone on how things are going to roll out, but having the depth that we have, it's something special because we know whoever we put out there, we trust. Like, I knew once I got off that mound and whoever we put in, like, I knew we were still going to win the game, even with the next two games with Sanders, with Jet, with Hetz, with Petro, anybody that we put out there, I was just confident that they were going to do their job and we were going to win. So having that behind our backs is a real confidence factor, and being able to have that can really drive us through these games.
Well, Auburn gets the sweep over Youngstown State, and Jake Marciano was a big reason for that. I do want to ask you, too, because it took a couple of games for the bats to get going, right, with the guys that are in charge of trying to score and win the ball games. And so for you as a starting pitcher, not just on Friday, but just in general throughout your career, how difficult is it for you, or maybe it's not at all, when the offense isn't going like we know it can and you still have to go out there and do your job, which is pitch strikes and get outs?
Exactly. What I think about during that is really just do my job. I trust our offense, and our offense is one of the best in the country. So it's not something I disbelieve or believe in. I just know that they'll have our backs, and we don't really have to think about what they're going to do. We just have to control what we do, because if we can put up a zero, then that makes their job easier, and then that makes them more confident up to bat. So I wasn't really thinking about how necessarily they were doing, but I just was trying to stay focused on our part. And if we can put up the zero or put up just only like one run throughout the game like we did, it's a lot easier to win that game.
Well, Jake, you got to tell me here. You're a Jersey kid now, and you're down here in the Deep South. What's something you've discovered? What's a food or a restaurant or something you've noticed, or maybe something on campus that is different than what you grew up with back home in New Jersey? Talk to me a little bit about Auburn so far.
Well, I definitely like the South a lot better, I'm not going to lie. But the one thing that...
Warmer down here,
said,
Jake.
Like, the one thing food-related I like the most, I would say, like, the difference is we don't have as much sweet tea. That's definitely a big change, and I actually like it. I usually have a good amount of it in the fridge back home. That and me and my roommate always go to Fusackley's. That's something different that we kind of like.
Yeah, they don't have all those chicken places up north. I grew up in Ohio, which is like Midwest North. You grew up in New Jersey. That's North North. And it's just a completely different world down here, isn't it?
It is. But it's to be honest, I like it a lot better.
That's awesome. Well, man, we hope you're around for a long time. Jake Marciano, sophomore lefty for the Auburn Tigers again. He's got the start on Friday against Youngstown State, helped Auburn sweep Youngstown State, and the Tigers prepare for Cincinnati this evening. Jake, we really appreciate your time today joining us here on ESPN 106.7. This has been an absolute blast. We appreciate your time, and best of luck the rest of the season.
Thank you. I appreciate this a lot.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Thanks again to Jake Marciano, sophomore lefty for Auburn baseball, joining us here today, talking about his start on Friday, talking about the pitching staff, the coaching staff, everybody for this Auburn baseball team, and a really fun interview with him earlier today. So we appreciate him taking the time as the Tigers get ready for Cincinnati tonight. We'll talk about more with that coming up in just a few minutes. But phone lines are open the rest of the show. If you want to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. And Terry, you're on the line, my man. I hope everything is good for you. It's been a little bit.
And everything's great, Jack. Oh, yeah. How you and Christian doing?
We are doing well. Fantastic. Believe you want to talk a little football. Is that right?
I do. Talk about Alex Gullish's comments.
Okay.
Isn't this kind of what Auburn fans have been waiting on? And who's it sound a lot like? Well, like Nick Saban when he got hired, right?
Which is why we made the comparisons of, yes, hindsight is 20/20, but you almost got a little bit of that Nick Saban-esque mentality with Brian Harsin. It just didn't go the way that...
Which, Christian, I want you to remind folks of what we're talking about in case they weren't with us in
Yeah. Talking about how Alex Gullish is going around doing his booster program, doing the booster tour, basically, and saying that we need all of these booster dollars and we appreciate your support. However, this is how things are going to be run, and if you want to have a major say and you want to walk in and basically point your finger where the dollar should go, thank you, but no thank you. We don't need your money. And so,
yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's a guy taking control of the program, which Auburn needs.
Yes.
It's a guy letting you know where he stands right up front, and it's a guy that's going to have control of the whole program. And how long have we talked about Auburn's offense just stinking up the joint?
Since halfway through the Malzahn era, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
19
at
best.
So, you know, I don't know it'll be that way to him. I don't know yet. I'm not. Winning cures all. Let's be honest.
Right. The on the field performance is still up in the air, but I think you're in agreement of what is being said now is checking the right boxes.
Right. Right. He's saying all the right things and crossing all the T's, dotting all the I's. But the ultimate proof is on the field,
mm-hmm.
and that's the long and short of it. But he, this is what Auburn fans have needed. This is what the boosters have needed, and the people that gets it are the people that wanted to hire DJ Durkin. So, and it's never said that because when the Summerall thing, you guys alluded to it a little bit, when that fell through, you kind of thought they were going that direction. I was just secretly praying they wouldn't because he's a loser. He's a great assistant coach and a great coordinator, but a lousy head coach.
Who's that? Summerall?
Durkin.
Oh, okay.
So I was praying they didn't give him a shot, and he was gonna. Oh, he's gonna keep the recruiting class together. Well, he kept him, and he still didn't. So you know that's. But Alex Ellis is saying all the right things, and he's doing all the right things. But the ultimate say is on the field. That's the ultimate proof.
You're right. There's no doubt about it, Terry.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Kerry. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open the rest of the show. And he made the comparison to Saban kind of like we did in the first hour, talking about the goalish comments, because that's the comparison I made way back when with Harsin, you alluded to, because it was very much, I'm walking in, this is my program now, I'm going to run it the way I want to. But think about how much easier that was to do in 2007. Versus Harsin doing it in 2020 or 21, whatever it was, and Gullish trying to do it in 2026. I mean, we're talking 19 years from when Saban got hired at Alabama to when Gullish got hired. Well, I guess late 25. You get the point.
The game hasn't changed though, right?
No. You still have four downs to pick up a first.
Yeah.
You still got to go between the two goal lines to score a touchdown.
The clock just maybe doesn't stop as much, but other than that, I mean, it's still the same old game.
Still the same size, right? Yeah. Football hasn't changed much.
Simple game.
Yeah. So, good points, Terry. Appreciate your call. Appreciate your input on that. 334-321-1390. We got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break. We're going to flip to basketball. After that, talk about some of the big games. Last night, a huge game of the Big 12 last night. Big games tonight, big games tomorrow around the SEC, including Auburn on the road at Mississippi State. Look at that updated bracketology as well. But tonight at Plainsman Park, the Tigers are back in action for baseball as they welcome in Cincinnati. Right, a team who steps in 2-1 on the year. They opened up with a road series at Jacksonville State. And you may say, why would a team like Cincinnati open on the road at Jack State? Well, a lot of those northern teams, it's cold.
They can't see their outfield.
And it's snowing. And it's miserable to be outside. Take it from somebody who grew up there. It's not fun. And a lot of those teams have to go out and travel to the Carolinas, to the South, to the West, to Texas, wherever they can go that doesn't involve playing college baseball in the state of Ohio in the month of February. And Cincinnati went 2-1 against Jack State. They won the first two games and got beat on Sunday 1-0, which you described as and kind of laughed it off as getaway
game. It's getaway day. Yeah.
Yep, just getaway. And it pretty much sums it up. And the numbers of that series, I think, would say that as well. Don't want to go super deep into that. But it doesn't feel like, for whatever reason, and maybe it's just because it's early in the first midweek game, I don't know, it doesn't feel like Auburn's welcoming in a fellow P4 team tonight.
No. And I guess it's a lot of that is just because it's non-conference play. You expect to have, weirdly, a little bit more P4-level competition in the midweeks during conference play. At least Auburn does with their games with Georgia Tech and a couple others. I mean, you have a couple of the mid-majors rather than, I guess,
you still got South programs, and UAB and Samford sprinkled in there.
Right. But, no, it feels a little bit unique just because it's so early on in the year. I mean, I guess this goes to the college football mindset of this is a – you just got done playing week zero. You're now playing a week one, or if you played in week one, a week two Power Four opponent, almost like a Ohio State and Texas this year, but something that you're not necessarily used to seeing before you go to Arlington this weekend.
Yeah, and so it's Cincinnati tonight. Projected starters, I have not looked since to see if we have a lineup from Auburn. I will go and look as we speak. Alvarez is expected to get the start tonight for Auburn. Excited to see his first action on the year. That's a guy that really came on late for Auburn last year. Somebody who I think they believe can be in the true rotation, right? Somebody they're going to rely on him this year, and he's expected to get the start tonight. Again, I'm looking to see if we have a lineup card for Auburn. We do not. So still waiting to get that. Tennessee's was out early because they are already playing right now. So I don't know if they going through Knoxville or something. I don't know.
I know that MLB, you have to post it 3 hours in advance. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the college one is, to be honest.
Yeah. So, I mean, we should have it very soon for Auburn. But, yeah, Alvarez going tonight should be exciting. Cincinnati, not going to blow you away. Pitching's fine. Hitting's fine. Auburn should win tonight. Should. But it is baseball, and you never know. And they're really preparing for what this weekend holds. Kansas State, Florida State, and Louisville. All those games played at Globe Life in Arlington, Texas, where Auburn has been pretty successful in the recent
years. Yeah, rumor has it they've had their fair share of success in that game. But more importantly, the biggest hitter with the question marks of all this week, Jacob is, in fact, in Auburn gear tonight.
For now. Depends on how I feel when we get off the air. We'll talk Auburn
depends
basketball.
Depends on who's winning.
College basketball bandwagon. Yes, all that when we come back.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us. Phone lines are open. We've had some callers today with good comments and things to say, so we'd love for you to be one of those as well. 334-321-1390, or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at at 334-784-1067. And we cap off the trifecta of Maine sports for Auburn. We hit on football, hit on baseball, and now we talk about basketball because the college basketball season, we are less than a month away from Selection Sunday, which is crazy in itself, right? It's a crazy idea that Selection Sunday coming up in mid-March, it will be on March 15th, which is less than a month, right? And so Auburn has six regular season games remaining, do the Tigers. You've got, of course, Mississippi State coming up tomorrow on the road in Stark Vegas. We'll talk more about that in particular tomorrow. But college basketball is starting to get dicey, Christian. And we're going to look at bracketology in just a moment. And you've got to take for Auburn to where they need to be in order to be competitive in the NCAA tournament. But want to recap what happened last night. Want to preview what's coming up tonight across college basketball, especially in the SEC and in the top 25. And kind of how everything impacts Auburn. Man, the Big 12... I thought the Big Ten was it. I think in the last several weeks, the Big 12 has taken the crown of the best conference in college basketball. I mean, it's really hard not to respect what they're doing right now with Houston, Arizona, Iowa State, Kansas, four teams in the top 10, Texas Tech, and BYU also being in the top 25. I mean, you give me those six teams against any other conference, I don't know anybody else that can run with those six on any given night.
And then you pair that with Central Florida and TCU, who we've talked about all season long, is they're both 6-6 in conference play, and they've gotten a solid win over one of those top teams that you mentioned, but are in every single contest to where if they had a little bit more talent, right, they would they'd be able to get it done. But for those two teams being right in the middle of your conference shows you how solid the team is, or the conference is.
But then you compare it with the Big Ten, who has four teams in the top 10, Michigan, Purdue, Nebraska, Illinois, two more teams in the top 25, Michigan State and Wisconsin slipped in there this week as well with their big win over Illinois last week. Those teams are good too. But when you look at bracketology, the Big Ten and the SEC still lead it, according to Joe Lunardi, with 10 teams per league making it to the NCAA tournament. UCLA's trying to fight their way in. Ohio State's trying to fight their way in. Indiana's trying to fight their way in. USC as well. Those are all teams kind of fighting on the bubble right now. And the SEC, I'm sorry, we love the SEC. We love the conference. We love the teams that are in it. SEC, if you put any combination of an SEC team in the tournament against any combination of a team from the Big Ten or the Big 12, they get smoked. Smoked.
You're looking at 10 teams, too, with Missouri and Joe Lunardi's most recent updated bracketology being the first team out. So he wants 11 in the tournament right now for
that's
the SEC.
That's just wrong to me. And this year, unlike last year, we knew it was going to be different, and we alluded to this a while ago.
Right.
The SEC, their record,
the
right?
The SEC.
For sure. 10-2, 9-3, 8-4, 8-4, 8-4, 8-4, 7-5, 7-5, 5-7, 5-7. Those are all teams in their conference records in the SEC that are trying to make the NCAA tournament. Last year, 500 or a couple of games above, it was like, man, that's awesome. Yeah. Because the SEC was just that good. This year, it doesn't have that resume. It doesn't have that status, I guess. There's another word I'm looking for. It doesn't have that whatever. It doesn't have the oomph that the Big 12 and the Big 10 have this year.
It's almost
year.
Like a persona that they don't have this year. Of last year, you had five or six SEC teams competing for the number one overall seed and one seeds, and then, oh, darn, we had to settle for a two seed. Now it's like, okay, there's a conglomerate of 7, 8, 9, 10 seeds in the tournament for the SEC. It still will be very interesting to see how the Southeastern Conference does in the tournament because, again, last year you had a feeling that, again, the SEC was just going to dominate, and you saw it, again, all number one seeds in the Final Four with Auburn and Florida obviously winning the entire thing. But we see how different March Madness is than playing conference games. You see how the whistle is different. You see how the physicality is different. And so I think that still might be something that gives the SEC the benefit of the doubt because of how physical and how it is bully ball on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday nights of once you go and you play games against some of these other teams, not including the UConn's, the Arizona's, the Michigan's, like those types, but against the 4 and 5 seeds of the Big Ten and the Big 12, you feel like that could possibly round things out a little bit.
I just think it looks different right now, man.
I agree.
Take Houston, Iowa State last night.
Yeah.
I mean, that game was awesome. 70-67, Iowa State takes down Houston. That was in Ames. Those two teams just look different than anything the SEC's putting on the floor right now. Even with Florida, who's the best team in the league, who, by the way, is not a top 10 team, where the Big Ten and the Big 12 each hold 4. Right? Think about that. UConn being another one, and without looking at it, I assume they've got Gonzaga as a top 10 team. I don't know who the other non... Oh, Duke. Sorry. It's Duke from the ACC. They're the third-ranked team in the country. Don't worry, though. They had a tough one last night, man. The Orange almost had
Gonzaga.
Them. The Syracuse Orange almost had them, man. God.
Gonzaga
101-64.
Gonzaga went on the road to beat a really good Santa Clara team who right now is a play-in tournament team.
It's embarrassing.
But everybody gave them the recognition of what a nice win for the Zags.
Not everybody. But Iowa State Houston last night is a perfect example. And guess what? You're going to see it again tonight. That's the Big 12. You're going to see it tonight in the Big 10 when Michigan, the number one ranked team in the country, heads to West Lafayette to take on Purdue inside Mackey Arena, the number one team and the seventh ranked team. That will look different than any other game in the SEC all season long.
You're also going to see it in the O'Connell Center. Florida's only 22.5-point favorites over South Carolina.
Somebody just texted us that. That's funny. Yeah. Which is basically what Duke was against Syracuse.
Yeah, I think
last
night Duke was 20.5-point favorites.
And they doubled it.
And Cameron Boozer had to play like 28 minutes in that game.
But my point being, again, the SEC, we knew there had to be a drop-off this year. But I think the drop-off has been farther than we were expecting.
I think the drop-off, I wouldn't say it's as far, but I think, again, the conglomerate of teams in the middle, I think, has evened out, and it makes it look as if the drop off was bigger because the top team in Florida, at least maybe not as of the last couple of weeks, but I guess take out Florida and you look at the other standings in the SEC, as my ESPN page.
Well, how many
refreshes
teams do you think are, let's just say, Sweet 16? I think that's sure. I think that's a good standard for judging a conference and how many teams can get there or do eventually get there. How many teams does the SEC right now, would you put your hard-earned dollars, your Monopoly money on, yeah, that team's getting to the second weekend?
Before that, just getting back, I think if you look at the teams as a whole, there's a little bit of a drop-off, but I think the bottom barrel has been raised a lot for the SEC as well.
From top to bottom?
Just from, I think the top has taken a little step back, but I think the bottom has taken a big step up, which makes it look as if the conference has weakened just because of Texas,
maybe.
Texas A&M, Missouri, and the fact that Georgia has gotten a couple of nice wins. Auburn has a couple of really nice wins in there as well. There is still that drop-off, but I just don't think it's as big as it was last year where the top 4 or 5 teams just did not lose to the bottom 8 of the SEC. But answering your question, yeah, I would still not take the Southeastern Conference over the other two if I had to put Monopoly money on those teams representing their conference with more than one team into the Sweet 16.
I just don't think the SEC's got the scare factor that it did last year, which is crazy because there's a lot of good players in this league. I just don't think there's a lot of good teams. Like, nobody, I promise you, if you ask any of those teams from, and I'm not talking about Michigan, the number one team in the country, I'm talking about a competitive Big Ten team or a competitive Big 12 team, man, they're not scared of Missouri. They're not scared of Texas A&M. They're not scared of Auburn. They're not scared of Texas or even Kentucky right now. Alabama, yeah, probably because of the offense. Tennessee, yeah, because of their physicality. Vanderbilt, I don't know. maybe. 21-4. Yeah. Can't fake that. 8-4 in the league. Arkansas, maybe with some matchup nightmares, and Florida because they're defending national champs.
Yeah. I have four, going back to answer your question.
Four teams, you have confidence in?
Teams that I would have confidence if the tournament started right now to make the Sweet 16.
Florida, Tennessee, Bama.
No, Florida, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Alabama.
Okay.
I don't trust Tennessee because give a solid moving big man to guard Nate Amint, and their offense struggles, and I think teams can play – I think teams in the tournament can match the physicality of Tennessee, but I wonder how much Tennessee can match other components of other people's games.
Vanderbilt's the team for me that I can't decide on. I can't decide. Mark Byington will be the SEC coach of the year. He should be. They're 21-4. You can't – I mean, again, you can't fake that. That's legit. I just don't know.
And how weird is it because the confidence level is because you don't have one of those – you have Tyler Tanner who leads the way for this team, but other than that – you don't look at him as a bona fide star in the SEC. They're just a solid team.
And they're also not healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, Duke Miles didn't play the other night. They still won.
Yeah, he's only played in 18 of the 25 games.
And they still picked up a solid win without him. Him and one of the other guys, I forget his name off the top of my head, they beat Texas A&M.
Yeah.
They beat Auburn and then beat A&M. And it's like, okay, their lone loss lately was Oklahoma by one, where they almost came back and won. If they don't go down by 20 points, they probably win that game. I just don't know if I have confidence in them in the tournament, and maybe that's just me being biased. I can't give you a legitimate reason. Can't do it.
I trust just the numbers that I see of 17 assists to 10 turnovers.
Yeah.
37 rebounds a game.
Totally fair.
Shooting 48.5%, 78% from the free throw line, and 36% from three. Now, granted, again, in the tournament, you can wash those numbers out because you have one bad shooting night and you make your way back home. But that with Tyler Tanner steering the ship, you have a couple of really nice three-point shooters in there as well. And again, a team that just gang rebounds. They don't have that one star player other than if you're looking at Tyler Tanner. But just a solid group of guys that you can throw 8 or 9 guys onto the floor. You don't feel like there's a big drop-off and you play great defense and rebound like hell.
Let me ask you this question again about the SEC and how many teams you are confident in would put your Monopoly money on to make the Sweet 16 if the tournament started right now based off of Joe Lunardi's bracketology.
That was another thing that I was going to look at. Okay, so we'll dive through this, looking at it kind of as we go.
Where Auburn, by the way, is still a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament, according to Joe Lunardi, as it stands this morning. 8 seed, sorry. Yes, yeah. 8 seed. According to Joe Lunardi, matched up with the 9 seed Indiana for now.
Correct. Which, total side note, you talked about the conference level. I think if Auburn wants to play into the second weekend, you got to get to a 7.
From a matchup standpoint?
Because the 8-9 is very, very scary.
Then you got to play
the
1.
And then you play the 1 seed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would feel, I mean, again, obviously, I think the jumping from an 8 to a 7 is about as big of a jump as you can get. Other than...
from here on out.
I just mean in general, like looking at the tournaments. Oh, I think an 8 seed versus a 7 seed is such a big jump, not even from the first matchup, but from the first couple of matchups. Especially this year when you're looking at the top 4 teams, who you're all going to see play each other on Saturday in what is going to be a Final Four preview because they're fully expecting 1 plays 4, 2 plays 3 this weekend. Yes. 1 plays 4, 2 plays
3. In the AP top 25.
In the AP top 25. And if you go and you ask 100 people, same Monopoly question, but who the winner is going to be of the national championship, guarantee 80% of it is on one of those 4 teams in that conversation. And so I think, again, getting to a 7 seed to where you play a 10 and then a 2 if they win, I think that's where you would like to be. I don't know if a 6 is an option unless you just go undefeated and make a little bit of a run in the Nashville tournament, which, I mean, that would be a nice jump as well. But going from an 8 to a 7, I think, is a huge jump in the tournament. But looking at it right now, we'll start with work our way from the left side, looking at Vanderbilt as the 4 seed, taking on Hawaii. It's a win.
Should be.
And then Louisville. I like Vanderbilt over Louisville.
If Louisville can get out of the 12-5 matchup against a hot Liberty team.
Right. Yeah.
I think Louisville would run circles around Vanderbilt. I don't think Vanderbilt could guard Louisville.
Really?
Yeah. Mykael Brown Jr. is that dude. I don't think Vanderbilt could guard him. Me personally.
Yeah?
Me personally. So you like Vanderbilt in that in those matchups to get to the second weekend.
I do. Yes.
Okay. What about Alabama? They have if the going off of Lenardi's bracketology right now, High Point in the 4-13 game.
Yeah, I mean that Alabama plays High Point. That is going to be a 106-93 win for Alabama. And then what would be a fantastic round of 32 rematch, Alabama and St. John's, where Alabama got the better of the Johnnies at home. Thanks, neutral site floor. St. John's is playing really good basketball right now, but I'd still trust the offense to get them into that next weekend because I think offense can buy you three wins in March.
And then the other one you had was Arkansas, right? Where they
working Arkansas, I mean, just right here and stand on the left side, Portland. You have Tennessee in the play-in game of UCLA and San Diego State.
But you didn't trust Tennessee, right?
Oh, you're saying of – I thought you were just talking about
just the teams that you – yeah, the teams that you trust.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying if there's another team in there.
Oh, yeah, I guess that could be the same.
Weirdly enough, because Tennessee I would throw in that conversation of things sitting
oh
right now.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Because of UCLA and San Diego State, I think UCLA beats San Diego State. Tennessee beats UCLA. I like Tennessee over Gonzaga.
Absolutely.
Again,
Gonzaga can't handle
not one of my four teams if things ended right now, but based off of the Joe Lunardi conversation.
Where's Arkansas? Am I just blind on here? I've looked through this thing three times and can't find them.
We're continuing to work our way. For those that would like to know, Yale is back in. They've they've risen to a 13 seed.
That's crazy. They're going to end up as a 9 seed Nebraska. In the tournament. That's so wild.
Yeah. Arkansas a 5 seed in Tampa right now. In the West San Jose bracket.
I like Arkansas to get out of that.
Arkansas taking on Belmont, and then Michigan State as the 4 seed taking on North Carolina Wilmington.
I like Arkansas.
I think I like Arkansas on that as well.
So, I don't know. Still a lot of things to be determined and a lot of things to be decided. For Auburn in particular, you're still an 8 seed. You're still paired up with a 9 seed, which means you would be paired up with a 1 seed in the round of 32 trying to get to the Sweet 16.
Real quickly, I love Florida. Beating Austin Peay and BYU, that would be a really fun matchup. Florida and BYU
one.
In the round of 32.
That's
you then
as good
have
as it gets.
Texas A&M, who has dropped to a 10 seed, taking on Wisconsin. That's scary
for
Texas
too.
A&M just to get out of the first round. You beat them. All right, here's Houston.
Oh, that'd be ugly.
And then
the Wright State
Baylor.
Raiders are in there, baby. Yeah, the Raiders going to take down Houston in that first round. Yeah. Don't you worry. The 15 seed Wright State Raiders. Nah, they ain't got
beat Georgia in one of the games this past weekend in baseball.
Nice. Okay, we've blown past the break. We got to go. We'll be right back. We'll wrap up the Tuesday edition of the show right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. We've talked all things football, basketball, baseball, Olympics, cheating, cussing Canadians. I mean, you name it, we've got it today. It's been an awesome show. If you missed any of it, be sure to go back and catch up with the podcast version of the show. We'll have it posted for you here in just a little bit on our station website at ESPNAU.com or wherever you get your podcast. And included in today's show was an interview with Jake Marciano, Auburn baseball left-handed pitcher, the sophomore who got the start last Friday. He played really well, and so did Auburn, and so we had a conversation with him. Plus some of the comments from Alex Golish that got some people fired up, and also talks of basketball as well. So, been a great show. If you missed any of it, again, go check it out, ESPNAU.com.
We're about to make our way over to Plainsman Park here shortly. Don't buy Jacob a $2.50 hot dog.
Please.
Don't do it.
Don't. No, I can afford that, I swear. I don't make a lot, but I make enough for that. Yeah, cool specials going on at Plainsman. $2.50 hot dogs, $5 beers. It's Mardi Gras tonight.
Jacob's
going to
somehow walk away with more beads than anybody, and I can't tell you how, but he's going to walk away with a lot of them.
I think they're just giving them away, aren't they?
I mean, yeah, but you can just donate the others for...
No, I don't need that. That's okay. You can keep those for yourself. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Plus, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joins us. Double D, Daryl Dappertz does as well. All that on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, 2-4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.